Welcome everyone to our inaugural podcast, and I'd love to take an opportunity to know who we have here. So why don't we start with you, Mitzi?
Hi, Mitzi McKenzie with McKenzie Family Advocacy in Clinical Consulting.
And Ken Seely with Intervention 911, and we also have a treatment center down here in Palm Springs, and we're going to be talking to people and talking to families and helping people, figuring out if there's people out there suffering, give them some answers.
Yeah, and I think I'm Eric McLaughlin. I'm a clinical social worker here in California. I work with Ken at Intervention 911 in Ken Seely Communities. And one of the things that we love about Mitzi is that she shares kind of the same approach to recovery as we do. We don't take like a narrow focus on looking, someone's got a problem, send them away, we got to fix them. It's much more, I think, modern and up to date. And Mitzi, maybe you can talk a little bit about what your approach is like and what you're doing these days.
Sure. I also wanted to say that I'm a licensed clinical social worker. I'm licensed in the state of Arizona, which love social workers.
Yes, we're the best.
We just are.
They're the best. They always like to brag about each other's being the best in the industry. So.
Oh, okay. But to answer your question, what we try to do is rather than, you know, obviously we're going to get a call about one of your loved ones that needs to come into treatment. And so what we do, I think we do a really good job, all three of us, is we immediately start using the we. We start talking about the family rather than just talking about the individual. And so one of the things that I'm really interested in doing is once a loved one is in treatment, I love making sure that every family member is part of the process in their own process, but part of the process.
And can you tell us what you mean by part of the process? Like if I were to sit in on you working with a family and see what part of the process is, what are you doing for those family members? Because oftentimes they come to the situation seeing, fix my kid.
Yes.
Or fix my loved one.
Yes.
And we know that's not the solution, but what does your process look like?
Okay. Well, we first take the word fix out of the equation, right? And we start talking about healthy.
Because fix is something wrong, right?
Fix is shaming. It's a shaming word. Yeah. And it's a family, it's bigger than the family, which is why they've called us. And so from the get-go, we start talking about the family in treatment. What that would look like is we know that we typically have an enabler in the family. We have a chief enabler. We have a co-enabler. Oftentimes we have siblings that have been affected. And so when I talk about being part of the process, I talk about each one of the family members being heard, what they need.
Yep.
Not just focusing on the
black sheep.
Well, let's just call it that. I forget we're in a podcast and we can say anything we want, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so
the shaming word, black sheep.
Black sheep, he's the problem, she's the problem, she gets all the attention, you know. So when we start looking at a family, we oftentimes they're looking at getting one person to treatment. And what I'm here to talk about tonight is about getting everybody the treatment and the support that they need.
Yeah. And Ken, maybe you can talk a little bit, because I know working with you for all these years that our focus is exactly that. You cannot hope to have long-term gains in recovery unless the whole family gets some support for what's going on. And that means each individual getting their own kind of plan. What do families expect when they first come, though? My guess is that families don't come in thinking, I need to see a therapist, or I need to do an intensive, or what do you see from the families when they come in? Do they come in wanting that, or how do they come prepared for that?
Yeah, most families come in and, like Mitzi's saying, they say, fix them, fix the problem. It's over here. Here's the problem. You're the problem. Mm-hmm. Not them. You're the problem. Fix it.
And our family will be great.
Yes. And everything, the holidays will be better. Everything could be normal.
It's always the holidays.
Normal again. Mm-hmm. Which, what the heck is normal?
Well, it doesn't exist.
Right.
And it never was.
And so that's where their mentality is when they come in and they see us. And in all reality, everybody has their part. Every single person has their part. And if you're out there and you're listening right now, we are live on Facebook, and we are going to be doing these podcasts with K-Gay out here, and they're going to be advertising them. We're very excited.
Very.
About getting that out there, getting the message out there on K-Gay. David Lee, love these three people. Thank you, David.
Hi, David. How are you?
So, the families just figure that if there's a problem, it's the one that the identified person, which again is shaming.
Yeah, we agreed we weren't even going to use that word today.
Only on the podcast, not in public.
Okay, I'm good.
So. No, but I'm saying it because I want, like, we don't want to talk with a client in the room and the families in the room and then saying you're the identified person. That's shaming. We're not doing that. That we're going to talk as the family unit needs their help. So it's not just the person that's out there using, it's the whole family participates in some manner. So a lot of families, they're enabling and supporting their addiction without even knowing it.
Well, in most families that we meet, the people that are enabling the behavior that everybody's focused on is actually their addiction.
Mm-hmm. Talk about that.
Okay.
Let them know.
I will.
Look up there and let them know. Hey, everyone, tell them what you're talking, what you mean about that.
Well, when we have a family come in, and, you know, I think I like to talk with families about this is bigger than all of us. And so it's bigger than me even. I mean, I can't do this as a clinician. Mm-hmm. I can't address what's going on with your family by myself, which we probably will talk a little bit about clinicians keeping families in their hold that think they can and they're actually doing harm, because we have to have treatment teams. Just like each family member needs to have their own support and treatment, we have to have experts in different areas to address those needs. Mm-hmm. It's bigger than all of us.
Yeah.
When you tell we're back to the identified, when you tell the client that the family's called about, when you tell them, look, this is bigger than you, this is bigger than your family, you can see their shoulders rise because they've had so much weight on them. And so what we ought to be doing is we ought to be talking with the family about, and I love when you brought up what's my part. When I used to work in IOPs on family night, on Wednesday night, I used to do an exercise called what's my part.
Yep.
Because everybody has a part in the process, right? And we—
either in recovery or in the addiction.
Either or, right?
They have a part in either or.
Period. What's your
not
part?
Not in the middle.
Right.
Either or,
right.
Your part is in.
Right. And we're not talking about from a place of, you know, we go back to intention, right? Oftentimes what parents think is a gift of love simply is not.
Yes.
So it's all education, insight, and awareness, right? And so when families call us, Eric asked Ken, what do they need? I'm down here to tell you they don't know what they need.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right? And so by educating them, we begin to glean what they each think that they need, and then they become invested in the process.
Mm-hmm. And that was going to be my next question, actually. You know, I would imagine that some families can be somewhat resistant to thinking they need to do something. And so, Mitzi, you were just talking about how you use education as a key way to kind of work in with the family, build some trust, build rapport, get them to trust you. You know, you can be almost like a fortune teller with the family about how this is going to go. You know, if you do X, Y, and Z, X and Y, Z will happen. Mm-hmm. And when that happens, that builds confidence. But what are some ways that, you know, a family, you work with a family who might be a little resistant to the thought of not my problem?
I think the way I like to answer that for you is all in. And say that if you are going to work with family systems, whether you are a clinician, whether you are an interventionist, whether you are a recovery coach. I mean, we have so many different things out
there.
Oh my gosh.
Talking about a transport today.
Okay.
That didn't know how to do their job.
We were just talking about one that was actually doing harm.
Yeah.
Right?
Creating more harm.
If you're going to work with families, you have to be able, it's a slippery slope. You have to be able, I like this word gravitas that I recently got coined, and I liked it. I looked it up. I thought, okay, that is who I am. And I kind of like it. It sounds a little French. So, you know, you have to be able to stand up and go all in. And they need that from us. Families are looking for structure. You know, now, do they have those barriers that you have to get past? They have those barriers. But I think just letting people know, number one, when we have a parents that say to us, well, he's always been the problem.
Yes.
He's had this behavior since he was little. What's wrong with just coming out with it and saying, because you installed those buttons. Right?
And you created this.
You created this. And you know, this whole thing of people getting the chip on their shoulder and taking it as blame. You know, we as professionals, we have to just keep moving forward. Right? We don't get involved in all that. So education for me, I also think that you have to have that nurturing part, that slippery slope. You have to hold them accountable, the entire family, right? But you also have to have that nurturing side. But and so you go through some bumps and some scrapes. So I have a couple of sayings that in the very beginning of initial talking with a family of fasten your seatbelts. And to the parents, very clearly, when you change, they change. And it's accurate.
But that has to happen first, because if they don't change first, then the person that's in treatment is going to say, they're not changing. And when they go back into that family system, they're going to fall right back into old behaviors. And then people say, oh, that treatment didn't work. The treatment didn't work because you went back into old behaviors in an old system, in the same system.
And also, when somebody says to me that the treatment didn't work, I immediately want to know, what work did you do? And so then we're going to talk a little bit about good treatment and what authentic and genuine family work is, right? Because it's not pretty. And I think, you know, that's a great point because, you know, people, you know, well, the treatment didn't work. Well, maybe it didn't, but what did you do? What was your part? We get right back to what's my part.
Well, Eric was talking about today that he was talking with a family and they were like, the client didn't go to treatment. Right, Eric?
It's true.
His first one that didn't go to treatment. He was devastated.
It skewed your percentage.
It did.
But they came back today and said that the work that they're doing.
The family really, you know, one of the client's sisters was sharing that, you know, when this went through, when this first happened, I thought this being an intervention didn't work. And a couple weeks later now that the family's been doing their work, and I love what you said, Mitzi, I had never thought about putting it this way. When someone says treatment or intervention doesn't work, you have to say to them, well, what work have you done? Because this family has done the work. Each member of the family has sought out a support meeting with their peers, doing some reading of some great books. Some of them are doing therapy. And she's, what she said was, you know what, that intervention was successful because he may not make the decision to change, but we've all made the decision to change. And I feel closer to my family. I feel better about myself. And I feel 100% that we made the right decision in what we did moving forward. And that's really what the goal of any intervention is. It's getting to treatment is a byproduct of
it, absolutely
healing
is.
The family.
I had a conversation this morning with a family that have been in a process with a team, with some teams with us for about 6 months. And, you know, we were talking about, you know, the last, because, you know, we're getting ready to go into some independent things with their kids. And the dad, I was able to say to the dad this morning, I'm like, look, you know, look where you are 6 months later. And in the beginning, he himself would have never believed it. And one of the things I kept stressing is, but here's the thing, your kids are going to go off and be saturated with a lot of work. And so in essence, they're going to become the healthiest people in your family system. And you guys are like a big pizza and you want that those two pieces of pizza back. So you have a whole pizza. But this is really important what this dad said to me, because, you know, he said, you know, well, I can't even imagine doing what I was doing 6 months ago. I can't even imagine doing that with my kids today. And I'm
yes,
like, good.
The old behavior.
Good.
The old
because
behavior.
Because if those two kids, they've worked so hard. They've worked really hard. And the teams have all worked. The treatment teams they've worked with have worked really hard. And, in, you know, when I look at what happens when young people go back into the fold of their family, if the family hasn't done any work, I look at about 72 hours for that all to change.
Yes.
It's about 72 hours, you guys.
Yep.
You start seeing subtle changes at about 24.
Yep.
We've had so many over the years,
yeah,
mutual families we've worked with together. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we've had families, sometimes they have to go back.
Yes.
I just got a deja vu because I think we've talked about this before. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they have to go back and
yep,
we're like 24 hours. We see the changes, 48. Ah, the wheels ought to be coming off at about, and they do.
Yeah.
So it's about 72 hours. And so if the family wants to get healthy as a whole, it has to be done that way. Or when you reintegrate into the family and you're really healthy, it actually will blow a family apart.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Because when people get really healthy and then they go back to a system that hasn't done any of the work, they have these big magnifying glasses.
Yep.
Of recovery, and it actually makes it's probably even worse than before they went.
Mm-hmm. So if you're watching right now and listening right now, and you have a family member out there that's suffering with an addiction, I hope you're hearing what we're all saying. You know, we're all saying the same exact thing. It starts with you doing the work. You're the one that has to start doing the work. And when you start doing your work, things will change, like Mitzi's saying. Eric's saying it just happened with this family. Things will change where it brings your family closer together and you start getting a family in recovery. I have somebody right now that, you know, the mom and the dad and, you know, the brother and the wife, everybody, I'm trying to get everybody to go to Al-Anon and start speaking that language, because once they start speaking that language, and I love this because they'll say, oh, well, Ken, I'm a little too busy right now to go to a meeting. You know, I had a really busy, oh, it snowed. You know, it's winter, it snowed. And when their loved one comes home from treatment and they use the same thing, I don't like to say excuse, but the same reason that they didn't go to a meeting because it snowed. And then all of a sudden they're using again, we're setting ourselves up for failure.
Well, you're already using again, really.
You're
because
already
it's
using
that
again.
Contemplative,
yes.
You know. And this is going to take us right into talking about family intensives.
Yes.
But and by the way, when you call us, you are doing some of the work.
That's,
by picking
that's
up
doing
the phone
the
and calling us. Because as Ken was talking, I'm like, you know, but they are doing some work by picking up, you know, by calling us. But oh, by the way, that we're just getting started.
Yeah.
That phone call isn't the, you know, it's.
And I like to say, you know, because I want to hear more about the family intensives. And I,
yes,
you know, I think there's a lot of people who go to a family weekend and that at a treatment center. And those are helpful, right? But they're not kind of what you're talking about. And I often say, you're not given a instruction manual on how to handle your husband who's an alcoholic or how to raise.
What? There's no standard operating
there's
procedure.
There's no standard operating procedure. And it's really hard to find, you know, really good resources because so much of the problem is it's broad in spectrum. You know, yes, someone may have a genetic predisposition, but there's also social factors, economic factors, all kinds of factors that contribute to addiction and mental health issues. Mm-hmm. So it's a very complex problem that needs a complex solution. Mm-hmm. And so tell me a little bit about kind of...
Let me answer their question first.
Oh, sure. Go right ahead.
Before you go, Eric was just talking about, just to put it into clinical terms for some clinicians, because I sure hope there's some clinicians out there listening to us. Mm-hmm. It's called the generational stream and then the person and environment.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's what you were describing.
Yeah. So I have here where Jessica mentions that, you know, the excuse of not going to meetings is, you know, one that doesn't work because the addict will do anything to get their drug, right? So when they say, oh, I don't have time to go to a meeting because it's snowing or whatever the excuse is, but in all reality, I want to point out, Christine, I think it is here, right? No, Jessica. I want to point out, Jessica, and for everybody that's listening and watching, is it's not only the addict, it's the family too, because, you know, they may say they're not out there doing the drug, but like you said, Mitzi, when they're out there sleepless nights, when they're out there running around giving them money, Western Union money
to
them.
Oh no, the worst is renting hotel rooms for them to die in.
Yes, yes, yes. So when they're doing that, that's the same thing as the addict out there doing anything to get their drug. The families are doing anything to keep them safe. But in
which has become their addiction.
Yes. And so when you say, you know, it's snowing or I'm doing this or I'm doing that, you've been walking around eggshells and doing all these different things, trying to control it. And what ends up happening, it blows up in your face and, oh my God, how did this happen again? But if you go to a meeting, get a sponsor, work the steps, and now we'll go back to talking about the intensives, and go to an intensive, go get the work done, get a therapist, well, and start doing that work.
So let's talk about what that looks like, what that sounds like, feels like in the senses. Oftentimes, you know, when people will tell me, well, I've been to treatment. Okay, well, tell me what your perception of treatment is. I'm always redirecting back. What's your perception? A lot of times I'll hear, well, I was on a hospital unit for 3 to 5 days. Again, back to just being honest with them. That's not treatment, that's stabilization. Mm-hmm. People will say to me, well, we did family work. I'm like, okay, well, I'm a family clinician, so I want you to tell me what your family work was. I gotta tell you guys out there, what we're hearing is we're hearing about family weekends.
Mm-hmm. For weeks.
Well, and those are rare.
Yeah.
Those are rare.
Yeah.
And back in the day, we were talking about this last night, you know, back in the day, 20 years ago, there were actually genuine family weeks. Mm-hmm. And now what we're hearing about more is we're hearing about a family weekend. Well, I go dig a little bit deeper because, you know, if it's a facility I know, I might have the curriculum already. Mm-hmm. If I don't have it, I'll ask them for it. But when I ask the family to describe to me what they did in their family treatment, they went once, maybe twice.
Yep.
And what they received was education. Mm-hmm. And I think that in the field, we need to be more honest about what therapy is and about what education is. Look, I think education is phenomenal.
Yeah.
I'm constantly saying education, insight, and awareness. Because I believe anybody, you know, you can meet a family that doesn't have any education. They don't understand what's happening to their family.
Yes.
So I kind of give them a pass, mm-hmm. and they don't know. They're scared. Mm-hmm. They just have all kinds of emotion going on. I truly believe, though, that once you have those three things, you are accountable. Every member in that family, you know, in particular, the older people in the family, of managing that.
Yes.
Once you have the education, you can't make excuses anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because you are very clear on what's happening, right? So a family intensive, I do family intensives. I think there's a lot of people out there that do them. We're getting ready to join up and be doing them.
Yep.
Because they are really, really important.
So wherever you are watching, mm-hmm. if you have a loved one that's in treatment or in recovery, and you want to understand more of what we're talking about, mm-hmm. we're going to be doing them right here in Palm Springs.
We are. We're going to be doing, and family intensives are, you know, they're therapy. Mm-hmm. They're therapy for the family.
So describe that, because I know both of you, and I know the way you work, and we could probably rattle off two or three things that are pretty unique to a family intensive. But like for each of you, what would you say is one thing that a family could expect to happen that might be different from Family Education Week?
Well, I'm going to come straight out and start talking about, because you're yeah. doing them, and I've been in your treatment center for the mm-hmm. past couple of days, and the clients are so proud of their trauma eggs. Mm. They're really proud of them.
Yeah.
You know? And so I'll talk about your trauma eggs.
Yeah.
When you do a trauma egg, you're going back and you're looking at a lot of your pain.
Mm-hmm.
one of the things that I do in my family intensives, I love trauma eggs. I've done them myself over the years. I've done them individually for clients. Today in my career, I do only family work in the therapeutic side. And I adapted the trauma egg to the family. Wow. However, I would not do that with a family until each member of the family had done some individual work.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You can't do it too early.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right? And so...
So for your family, the way you look at a family intensive is it's a continuation of a process that has started back at some point in which you've basically given the whole family system a treatment plan. And that treatment plan is to start doing their own work, gaining some of that education and insight and awareness that you talked about, so that when you come to an intensive, you can really dig in to the meat and bones of...
Yes, but you've done cases with me over the years, mm-hmm. and we learned to do them together, didn't we?
Yeah. Yeah.
And we do them simultaneously. Mm-hmm. We do them in phases. I'm sure we're going to talk about length of time in treatment. You know, I think we're not talking about anything less than a year. Mm-hmm. You know, my average for my family's in treatment and the phase is up to about 9.8 months, which is pretty good. Yeah. Last mm-hmm. year, I think I was at 9.3 months, and that's for the entire process,
mm-hmm. yeah.
which is a 90-day thing that changes up. We get more independent as we go on, and parents get less codependent.
Yeah.
You know, but it's simultaneous because in the beginning, when you do an intervention and you send somebody to treatment, family intensive work starts immediately for me. Mm-hmm. But it's ongoing, and there's different pieces of it, kind of like recovery is. When you first start recovery, you've got to be really simple. Mm-hmm. I think I learned from you guys the plate of food.
Yep.
You put recovery, got to get sober, piece of, you know, your protein.
Yep.
Then you add this. It's the same thing in treating a family system. So you're doing family intensive work, but you're doing it simultaneous while other treatment teams are treating. Mm-hmm. So it's called surround care.
Yep.
I love it. We've done a lot of it together.
A lot.
And you're also doing tune-ups on it.
Yes.
And then there's a big intensive part when you bring the entire family together mm-hmm. to do it. So if somebody out there is doing that for, but a week isn't enough anyway.
Yeah.
Even if there's people out there doing that, it's a week isn't enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you're tuning in right now, you're listening, watching, we are talking about family systems and getting the families into recovery. If you know somebody that's out there suffering or a family member that's out there suffering, please share this, forward it. Whatever you need to do, get the message out there, because it's really about getting the whole family system into recovery. It's not about getting the person into recovery. It's about getting the mm-hmm. family into recovery. So I'd like to do a couple takeaways from our last half hour that we've been here talking. Mm-hmm. What do you think would be some takeaways for people from this?
We've talked about family intensives.
Yep.
We've talked about the importance of having the entire family in treatment. I would say for me, if you have somebody in your family that's struggling, and you know they're struggling, and maybe you've been in and out of treatment, try sitting with that person and just sharing with that person that you heard us today, and you don't have to believe us yet. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of a weird kind of knowledge here, but take a risk and sit with that.
I like the way you say yet.
Yet. I like that.
That was good.
Because I don't want to lose one. I don't. But if you're in a we wait pattern, that person's still going to go.
Yeah.
But I think that for my takeaway is sit and tell that person, rather than doing what you've been doing, you know, for a while now or for I don't know how long, why not sit and talk with this person about we need to get some assistance. This is bigger than us.
Mm-hmm.
And see how that changes. Maybe it won't.
Like instead of you need to get some help, we need some assistance.
We need some assistance. I need some assistance in understanding this. Because I think when somebody's not well, mm-hmm. well, the whole family's not well, oh, by the way, it's not just one person. But I think when we're focused on the one person, it is a you. Mm-hmm. But what would it be like for you to share that we're not well
mm-hmm.
and we want to get well? So that to me is the biggest takeaway of change. What do they talk about is your attitude or your response? It's not the way, it's how you respond to something.
Mm-hmm. What's the only thing you can control is the way you respond to something.
So how about trying responding to what's going on in your families differently. And start talking about our family needs to, our family, you know, I don't feel good. I want to get some, I want to learn more.
Yeah. So like when I do an intervention, like you said, the only thing families can control is the way they respond. So for so many years, they've been pushed that button and explosion, and they respond in a way that blows up, and that's normal for them. So now changing their behavior on how they respond is going to get a different result.
If, and even if it doesn't immediately, eventually it is going to.
Yes, it won't immediately because they're going to keep pushing that button harder and harder until you do try to explode. And then when they realize that button isn't working anymore, they're going to stop pushing that button and look for another one.
And it's really, not only is it gratifying for us, but it's really a privilege when you've worked with a family for about a year. It's really something. It's an honor to sit with them and have them all talk about what they used to do. Right?
Yes.
And the obviously, you know, we've watched. It's hard because people grow so much and they don't realize how much they've grown.
Yeah. And Diane's just saying, oh, I hope I, you know, what did she say here? She wants to work in the field and help people. And that's another thing we're doing here in Palm Springs. If you want to learn how to get your KDAC in 14 months. You could get your KDAC by coming to school on Saturdays, right down here in Palm Springs on Saturdays. And you will be able to get, every 2 months, we enroll people in the school. And CCAP?
CCAP Academy.
Well, CCAP Academy is
doing
it.
Talk a little bit about that certificate, that whatever that, I don't know. I'm not familiar, but talk a little bit about what that is and what you're able to do with that.
Yeah, with CCAP Academy, you could come in on Saturdays, get your degree after 14 months, take the test, you know, pass the test. And then what you could do with that degree is you could start doing counseling with that, with people in treatment. And the treatment centers are able to bill insurance because you have that credential. And in the state of California, you have to have a certain amount of people with KDACs in your treatment center in order to be able to bill for insurance or to even get licensed.
So counseling within the addiction.
Within the addiction.
Within the
field.
Addiction.
Absolutely.
And I think it's important. Yep. And thank you for, this is fun actually doing this, isn't it? But thank you for clarifying that because, you know, I think it's important that we each know within our scope of practice what we can and we can't do.
Yes.
It's very important because what we want to do is we want to support families. I love finding great treatment teams and to use because I don't want to do it all by myself and I can't do it all by myself. But I think besides that, I think we have to have people understand what their scope of practice is. So I'm, thanks for going over that.
So Eric, what about you? What's the takeaway?
You know, as families go through this and try and navigate it, they do the best they can, right? And I love the idea that, you know, there's relief from the pain and from the discomfort of struggling with something that you really have no idea how to handle. And some people have been through this for years and years and years. And, you know, each person has a choice every day to be in recovery or not. And what I would say is don't knock it till you try it and really put an effort forth in changing yourself, because hoping and praying that someone's going to get better and make you better, it's never going to happen. You have to make yourself better and then hope that he comes along for the ride.
And if I could just add to that is, you know, I heard Eric talk about doing this for years and years. And I also, we hear from families how much money they've spent. And they've spent a tremendous amount of money. And so if I could just add a takeaway to that of find good treatment teams that you trust and let those treatment teams do their jobs. Just, and look, listen to your gut. If you feel like you don't trust them, there's a lot of us out there. You can find some, but find good treatment teams and let us do our jobs.
And if you're watching, please send us texts, our messages here. We are really excited. We're going to go back and we'll answer your messages tonight or in the next 2 days. We'll go back and answer your questions. So thank you, everyone on Facebook Live. I think the one last thing, and the listeners that are listening, you know, the last thing for a takeaway for me would be, you know, really know when you are going through this pain and this misery that you're not alone. You know, there's millions of people out there suffering today, right now. And there's hundreds of people out there that are going to die today. Hundreds of people in this country because of this disease. And you're out there suffering, and I don't want you to be the one that is carrying that casket saying goodbye to your loved one because you didn't do what your gut told you to do. And reach out, get the help, talk to somebody, and reach out and do the work, because you can't blame the person that's out there using. They're numb to all of this. And I think our next one that we'll talk about is the people that we lost in this field, or, you know, our clients that we've lost and the regret the families have. So I don't want you to be one of those ones that regret what happened. I want you to fight back now. And I'm not saying every single one. I've had family members, they've done everything we told them to do, and still their loved ones end up dying. So I'm not saying that, you know, those people out there didn't do the right thing. I'm saying there are people out there that aren't taking the action, and I don't want you to be the ones to regret it.
Right, because, and I've been on both sides of the fence with families when they've lost someone, and, you know, families that have done everything back to treatment teams they trust, they've done everything that they were asked to do, they fare better through that kind of a process. But it's also in their hearts, they know that they did everything that they could do. So don't be a family that doesn't. Be a family that does.
Yeah. So thank you, everyone, for
tuning
in.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for listening on the podcast, on the, like we said, we'll be here with KG holding them on. You'll be able to get the podcast there. Facebook Live, we'll be posting there. And then we're going to also put it on YouTube Live. So thank you very much. And we look forward to seeing you all soon.
See you soon.